Hello, I'm Kerry Lonergan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. It's brought to you by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health. Today on the grill, a beef industry leader and entrepreneur who is taking on the biggest risk of his business life is opening an abattoir, a brand spanking new abattoir, and many in the industry think he could not have picked a worse time to start what, even in good times, is a tough, tough business. But toughness is something our guest has plenty of. Blair Angus, welcome to The Grill.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you for having me on.
Now, we'll tread softly and slowly to the big project. We'll get to that eventually. But first, your sidekick and partner and wife, Josie, could not be here today. You and Josie are known as such a partnership.
Well, we are. So hopefully I keep up the good standards she sets, but she does have a passion for training horses. And she's competing today in Charter Stowers on a metallic cat colt she broke and trained herself. So unfortunately, she can't be here today.
Well, tell me, who operates the barbecue at your place, and how do you have your steak, and how does Josie have her steak?
Well, we're both very medium rare type people, and I'm the protein cook, and she certainly does. We do great meals together, but the protein's always my division.
Okay, now let's get started. Let's start way, way back on your family property. What was life like then?
Oh, it was great growing up as a kid. I think back to how simple things were. My father was a very well-known sort of cattleman around the area for his skill with cattle and as a butcher. I remember the cattle slump that came along. I was around 10 years old when we lost the UK market, and we started a butcher shop in Bowen, and I think that's where my passion for beef came from, just being in the shop with Dad. That became an outlet for all of our prime cattle.
That was my next question, actually. You're old enough to remember the big cattle price crash. That was the early to mid-70s?
That's right, yeah. It was around about that time. I think 74, Dad started the butcher shop. And, basically, he was an apprentice butcher when he was young. He'd done his trade, but he'd been running cattle stations since he was 19.
Do you remember what you were selling cattle for at that time?
Oh, well, actually, we did expand our cattle properties then because people couldn't sell cattle. I do recall that. I was only about 8 or 10 years old, but I know that when we sort of expanded a bit at that point because, we bought cattle properties that were probably overstocked, really, because people couldn't actually ship the cattle. So it was,
a lot of stories from that era. What was your herd at those days? What was the herd like? I guess it was mostly bus tourist cattle.
No, they had a lot of. There were a lot of Borleys. I think there was a bit of Brahmin influence. We used to have a lot of Brindle Borleys and things. Dad's first big place he had was a place called Urana, so up behind Youngler, and up in that country you can actually still find straight shorthorns coming out of the jungle forest.
Can you really? All these years later, still coming out of the scrub tiger country, I guess.
Yeah, that coastal range still have cattle that don't seem to have much. There's a little bit of influence through there, but they still sneak out of there. It's amazing that they still exist, but yeah, Dad used to have, I suppose, more Hereford cross cattle back then. And I think it was the later 70s when the Belmont Red became available. And he bought Belmont at the first Belmont sale.
Now, expansion was inevitable and started, of course, you took advantage of that price crash, but as anyone would in the circumstances. But where did you look and where did you go?
Well, originally, Dad had that block I talked about, Urana. That was his breeding block in the fattening country near Collinsville. We moved to a property called Red Hill. The block at Collinsville was Belmore Downs, then we moved to Red Hill, which was just a little further southwest, and then purchased Kimberley a couple of years later. So it was only two blocks away from Red Hill. And then that was, well, we did have a block on the coast for a little while, but it was just mum and dad intended to retire there, but my father passed away when he was 59, so that didn't happen. But yeah, at that stage, then we're right in the sort of thick of where the original mines were developed, and it seemed to be the best bullock paddock started disappearing. We actually had to sell Red Hill not long after Dad had passed away to a mining company came in to mine that property. So we then expanded by buying Sondala, which is next door to Kimberley. And then when Josie and I married, we bought Chesterfield, which was only a little further west. And then about 10 years later, we bought Carpentaria down. So we've just slowly been growing when it was the right time to grow.
Now, on and on you went. I want to know, when exactly did you get the first germ of an idea to start an abattoir around Claremont in central Queensland?
I think if you spoke to me about 6 or 7 years ago, I would have vowed that I didn't ever want to own trucks or abattoirs. But I suppose we've been doing the branded beef for 22 years. And as we know, in the beef industry, a lot of external challenges get thrown to us. And we knew that it was inevitable that at some point in time, there would be some interference to stop us processing a casino. It hasn't arrived yet, but I think it will. We have a great relationship with the casino, and most of what we do there are actually for our, we pack into 7 brands, and some of our brands are bought cattle, and those cattle are usually derived from that southern area, so that will continue to happen down there. But basically, as our own brands developed, we've got customers that have become accustomed to a pretty good product, and we felt that we could do that better, and for the security of our meat business, we needed to tie up that processing end, because we weren't actually able to get a service processing contract here in Queensland with the markets that we required where we had customers. So I suppose our children were at an age where they were becoming more responsible. One of my daughters had done a business degree and the other was studying meat and animal science in Colorado. And the boys were nearly ready to leave school, so we decided that we had a family meeting, and we said this was the best avenue for us to take to just have that security for our processing and our meat business to continue.
So when was that, Blair? How many years ago did you click and say, yes, let's go for it?
About 5 years ago, Kerry. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Big decision. Where is progress up to now?
The hanging rails went in some of the cold rooms yesterday. So the equipment's going in. Most of the refrigeration units are in the cold rooms now. We're really, in a month's time, we'll be sort of just chasing up the final sort of floor coverings, the epoxy resins on the floor, and really just sheds over auxiliary buildings and things like that. But it's getting very close.
So when might you anticipate starting the first kill run?
Well, we hope to be commissioning in July, and that's really just practicing and also getting the team together. Well, Josie and I like to do things a little differently, so we've actually we'd like them to adapt to the way we want a beef broken down as well, which is it's a little different, but it's just we feel a better yield outcome for our customers and our cuts. So we've gone away from a chain boning situation. We have a situation where each carcass comes into a stand where there's a rise and fall platform and one man disseminating the pieces from there that goes down a chute to a table with boning stations off that table where they'll then further break those pieces down. And we've got a real focus on the high quality product. So it's our intention, and those that grade in the right categories, that loin will stay as one piece and then continue on along the chain to the dry age cold room. So we've then got a loin breakdown room as well. So we just sort of feel that from what the research we've done in Japan, they've sort of proven that table boning of loins does give a better yield, and we're looking to make sure that we maximise our yields, particularly with those high quality cuts. So there's a dedicated room for that, and then also we have been developing dry age markets around the world, and we'll have more capability to actually ship those loins out as full loins wrapped in muslin.
I would think that maybe you learnt the different ways of cutting up an animal, perhaps from your father in the butcher shop.
I think so. I think he certainly encouraged me. Look, to be honest, when I do a killer here at home, I try different ways most times I do it. So the way that we actually do a home kill, and for years we actually hang it as a full carcass. It's quite different, but given that we have to remove all the specified wrist material, we do have to split the carcasses at this point. But ultimately, the way that we and our men up north, the way we do a carcass, I just hate wasting anything. So they bring everything home, and we hang it as a full carcass, and it's interesting the way the cuts, and it's basically tender stretched by hanging it from the pelvic rim, and it does give you a different outcome, and I think it's a better outcome. So we yet to prove that in a commercial sense, but certainly our gut feel is that it will be a better outcome.
I know a lot of people will be watching, not just from all over Australia, but in plants around the world, because this does sound outstandingly different.
I think so, and like, yeah, we've got some great relationships around the world, and you know, our customers are very excited about it. We've worked very closely with the department to try and streamline those accreditations for where those existing customers are now. So hopefully there's not too many hiccups, and you know, that's really where our main focus is customer rather than throughput. I think if we wanted to do throughput, we'd very quickly be sucked into the commodity game, and that isn't, you know, for the 22 years we've been doing branded beef, we've tried to remove ourselves from that. Obviously, there's, you know, 24% of the carcasses trim, and that is in a commodity market, but certainly if you can add cream to the primals and you know, utilise as much bone as you can in those cuts as well, that's probably where the difference comes from. But again, yet to be proven. There's plenty of naysayers out there, I'm sure, but it was encouraging at Beef to hear some, you know, there were people from industry well recognised, very complimentary of it.
Let's take a short break now to hear a message from our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.
This podcast is brought to you by CompuDose, a proven way to maximise growth rates in grass-fed cattle. CompuDose allows you to target and achieve specifications for most major markets, including MSA grading and feedlots. Contact Elanco and find out how CompuDose can grow your beef operation. Results may vary depending on nutrition. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. I'm with Blair Angus, who's opening an abattoir at Claremont in central Queensland. Now, this different sort of processing, does that mean it's hard to put any sort of automation into the plant, or do you have that there as well?
No, we don't have a lot of automation. In saying that, it's very different to doing one here on the farm, because, you know, we have rise and fall platforms in the right place, but certainly not robots then doing the carcass. You know, I think when we initially decided to do this, we did a tour in America when my daughter was studying at Colorado for her spring break. We did I think 6 abattoirs in 5 days. And the real eye-opener for us was we went to an extremely big abattoir, 6,000 head a day, down to an on-farm abattoir that did 20 head a day. The, as you can imagine, the 20 head a day, very, you know, no automation whatsoever. When you worked it out in terms of labour units and output, that 20 head a day plant was probably three times more efficient than the 6,000 head a day plant.
That's an extraordinary thing to say, but look, I've heard it elsewhere that size does not necessarily mean greater efficiency.
Well, I think the main KPI when they're talking efficiency is chain speed. You know, not the starting point, how long it takes you to get this boxed in onto a truck. Now, that's where our focus is. The chain, what I noticed with the chain on a massive burning floor is you might look up to a station where there's six guys doing the same job, and the particular plant was doing 6,000 head a day, I think it's at least every 9 seconds. But when you looked across that floor, there was no point in time when everyone was working. And if you looked at that station where there were six guys stationed, there'd be two working, two sharpening, two standing there. And that really hit home to me. It sort of resonated with me that chain dictated that you would only be as efficient as your weakest link, if that made sense. And I'm not saying all plants were like that, but it's just that particular situation we went to. And then we went to that small plant and we worked out how long those guys worked for and how many cattle they put through. And that was just the figures at the end. So there's a lot of preconceived ideas about efficiencies. We've got to prove ours, I understand that totally. But at the end of the day, I think if you've got guys that are working for you that are able to do their best, I think if you put them in a situation to do that, you'll end up with a better outcome. And that's what we've aimed to do there.
Now, what sort of cattle will be processed there, Blair? Cows and bulls as well as finished cattle maybe? Isn't it just for your brand program?
No, it's not just for ours. If we sort of look at our own herd, currently we'd probably only ever get to around 20% of the throughput. Certainly, I think there's a lot of people in our neck of the woods here that would probably dabble with a branded beef or supply a brand of beef, supply cattle to a brand of beef, I should say, that don't really get the opportunity to do that up here. We've certainly had a lot of inquiry from different people in regards to service processing. And the way we would like to go forward is to have a component of service processing as well. And, you know, I think with times we just have to see where all of that pans out. But certainly there are people that do breed a lot more or finish a lot more cattle than I do in fairly close proximity to where we are. And a lot of those people are good friends or close acquaintances of ours that are really keen to try and see what we can develop with them. And I think that will be a challenge, but I do enjoy a challenge, but I think also those people want to see this happen. So I feel that, you know, it'll be little steps to start with. Make sure we're right. We did focus on making our plant profitable, even at a smaller throughput, which, you know, their budgeting models indicate that we can sort of budget on a lot smaller throughput. And, you know, if we're at capacity, that's good as well. But certainly the days where if you're not at capacity, you're burning money, we've tried to avoid that. And like I said, we have to test if our theories are right. But as we developed it and built it, that was our aim, to focus on maximising what we can get from each carcass rather than how many carcasses we can put through.
The region around Claremont is already reasonably well serviced by processors. You've got Mackay, Bellawheeler, a couple in Rockhampton. Is there room for another? How are they likely to react to another competitor nearby, do you think?
Well, I'm not out there. The couple that you mentioned are over 500 kilometres from where I am.
Yeah. Fair enough, yes.
It's still a fair way. But, you know, it's a hell of a bullock paddock here. And, you know, when we did our initial investigations, basically if I drew a circle 80 kilometres around me, and what that circle produces now at full capacity would only represent 20% of the prime cattle from that 80 kilometre circle. If we extended that circle to halfway to that 500 kilometre meat works, that would be a hell of a lot of cattle. But, you know, currently, cattle numbers are down a little in Australia. I'm not naive to that. I realise that. But in saying that, our team in Brisbane, the Signature Beef office in Brisbane, they're currently processing 350, 400 a week at Casino. It is happening. It's really just an expansion of the current business that we have. So, you know, we aren't really able to tap into our neighbourhood for that casino work that we do, because to cross the tick line, we can't do that from here. Our cattle are actually lot fed, so that's really to comply with the tick lines and the requirements there, and then also it evolves into the EU grain fed quota. So that's one of our main markets. So all the ones we ship from here are grain fed. Really looking forward to doing a grass fed product, not just of our own, but certainly of, you know, there's a lot of great grass fed cattle just in our immediate area. So it'll be great to get into that sort of things too.
I want to ask you about labour shortly, but I have to ask this question first, and let's get this straight. You received help from the federal government, didn't you? But as I understand it, it's a loan and not a gift. Is that right?
That's correct. The NAIF funding. We did also get a grant from the government as well, but certainly the major funding has come from the Northern Australia Infrastructure Fund. It's basically, while we're in the building phase, that's the risky time for any project. And our own commercial bank have been great advocates of ours, I suppose. We have a great relationship with them on our pastoral side. They understand the need to do this because they've financed us for quite a few years, and they've seen Signature Beef, and they understand the vulnerabilities that it faces in that processing part.
Yeah, Blair, so, I have to move on, because the labour problems are the constant reference when they're talking about your meatworks. If they have labour problems in big southern locations, how are you going to get labour in that rather remote location?
Well, we're working on that already. I'll keep a few cards up my sleeve, but certainly we're putting together a core of staff at the moment. And initially, we'll make sure that we do have experienced people in that core of staff and get them to understand the way we want it done. And it's important that we develop that culture. And then what we'd like to really see is, you know, there's still a lot of young people up here that want to be in the beef industry. And we do keep putting that forward rather than just the cattle industry, learn more about it and do a trade in the beef industry as well. And we are getting a lot of inquiry. I don't underestimate it for a minute that it will be a challenge. But certainly that side of things is in pretty good hands at the moment. We've got the GM and the plant manager. They've been working, they've been in place now for about 2 months, and they're getting a good team together.
And I understand you have on-site accommodation for around 75 staff, is that correct? Which is
That's it. We built a village.
That could be a game changer. You never know. It's extraordinary you've done that.
Well, I think it's good. I think it's good if we, especially if we're targeting those young people from the bush. You know, there'll be the opportunity for them to, you know, the day starts early, but as far as agriculture goes, it probably finishes early. And I imagine they'll have a few hours each afternoon. Rather than get bored, they could ride a horse, or we've got a large dam as well, things like that. We've got a rugby oval. Well, we will have a rugby oval. I've got the field. It's a little bit rough at the moment, but it's still working on it, but it's... you know, it's our intention to have you know, the district sporting teams, like we used to play cricket every year, and we, you know, probably not football so much, that was in town, but if we could come up with our own rugby team and whole cricket matches here, I think that sort of helps the culture a fair bit, and that was our intention there. The village looks pretty good. We've got the old Queenslander in the middle. That's where we put a brand new kitchen in there, but it certainly looks like the pub on the hill. And all of the modular buildings that we have installed are all brand new. We have them built in Toowoomba, so it looks pretty schmick.
Now, in the business side, does owning your own processing plant add integrity to your signature brand of beef?
I think it will. So Signature's our overarching company, so we have brands within that. So our original brand was Kimberley Red. It's still going very strong, but then we do have a higher a longer fed brand now called Horn Augustus, which is the origin of my surname, Angus. So we will certainly be able to have more preference for the customers. You know, if a customer wants something cut a specific way, we'll be able to do that here. And that will be our main focus. And in saying that, I have customers that want to have full loins, you know, rump included. You know, some of those want it through to the chuck as well, with all the bone and all the fat on, and then wrapped in meslin. And if the customer wants that, I'll be able to provide that. So I think in terms of integrity, we have very good integrity in our casino. You know, they do a great job down there. So that's not so much the issue. It's more about being able to provide exactly what the customer wants each time. So if you can picture our loin boning room, it has two massive windows that look out across the hay paddocks and the irrigation. They'll be in there. They can see the cattle. They can see what they eat, and they can actually just show us exactly what they want in that room. And I think once you start to do that, you know, we're talking about customers on a much smaller level than probably the big guys that you often talk to. But that's how our company has grown for 22 years, really, is just bringing those customers to our home and doing things with them. I just think the opportunity now inside a plant to do that will be very unique.
Blair, you face one of the toughest challenges in the beef industry today, to start a new abattoir. Everybody in the industry will be watching, and I think everybody will wish you the very best of success. Blair Angus, thanks for appearing with us on The Grill.
It was a pleasure, Kerry. Thank you very much. Cheers.
And thank you for joining me today. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan, and this is The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Beef Central and our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.